One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
People have told stories of the strange and supernatural for centuries. Tales of the restless dead return to haunt the living. Whispers of damned souls doing the devil's bidding on Earth. Rumors of inhuman things that still hunt in the old forests, untouched by the glare of modern life. There may be more to these stories than you could ever imagine. Join us tonight as we delve into the deeper truth inside these mysteries.
Ahoy, and welcome to the show. Right, first of all, sorry for the delay in shows. We've been away at Cannock Chase looking for ghosts and cryptids and all kinds of things. We spent the day hiking and we went to a war cemetery. So it's actually a German war cemetery there where there's over 5,000 German soldiers buried. Apparently it's, well, by all accounts, it's really active, and there's many accounts of even black-eyed children as well as ghosts being seen there, but unfortunately we didn't see a single thing or hear a thing all night. That's in the graveyard and the woods. Beautiful place though, well worth checking out, but yeah, no ghosts, so we'll have to go back. You know, these things are just pot luck. You've got to be there at the right place, right time. We have got an event on soon that we're organising in Grantham, so hopefully we get better luck there, and if we do see anything, obviously we'll share it with you. If you get a chance, check out the UK Paranormal Radio Network. It's now available as a podcast. We are a proud member of it, and there's plenty of other shows there that you might be interested in. So if you get a chance, check that out. Today we've got on returning guest Linda Godfrey. Okay, so most of you will be familiar with her work regarding the Dogman, Beast of Bray Road, etc. Well, she's got a new book, which is I Know What I Saw. And anyone that's had a strange encounter will, you know, that phrase will ring true, because you get told by the people that weren't there that start telling you what it was, you know, swamp gas, balloon, all these different things, and you know what you saw. And so I think the book, I think that's a clever title. So she comes on to talk a little bit about the book, mostly about what she believes, you know, her interests and stuff. So I think you'll find it interesting. I certainly did. And if you want to get the book, then if you listen at the end, she'll tell you where to get it from. We have got a copy of the book, and we're thinking about giving it away as part of a giveaway, which we'll probably give the details of that on the next episode. Right. Joe Gill posted into our Facebook group the other day a sighting that happened, a UFO sighting that happened over Grimsby. I think it was back in April. It's an interesting story. The pictures are fantastic. So if you get a chance, go to the Facebook group, Realm of Supernatural podcast, and have a look at the pictures on there. And then I followed it up with another sighting that happened just the other night, or a couple of nights back now. And the article in the Telegraph, the Grimsby Telegraph, goes like this. Just actually, I better just tell you where we are first. Yeah, we are based in Grimsby, which is in the UK. It's on the East Coast, and from here, we overlook the North Sea. A lot of UFO activity takes place over the North Sea, both over it and under it. So we get a lot of activity. The most common UFO at the moment round here being seen is this like egg. It's almost like an egg shape. It's got no lights on it, almost like a blimp, you know. But people see, I mean, one guy was driving down the road and it sort of came over the road real slowly, and he thought it was an airship, and he was driving under it, and then all of a sudden it just zipped backwards the other way. And as he came to a clearing, because it was flanked by trees, this road, and as he came to a clearing, you could see it just disappearing over the horizon. So it had obviously gone at some speed. So, you know, that's been seen quite a bit. The UFO in question the other night was three balls of glowing light. in a triangle formation. I'll give you the article here anyway. So this is from the Grimsby Telegraph. It says, "Really strange light caught on camera hovering over Grimsby. Several people say they saw unusual lights flying low in the sky over the town centre. Some really strange things are apparently been going on over the skies in Grimsby. Several people got in touch to say they spotted unusual lights over the town shortly before dawn on Thursday morning. The unidentified objects were seen flying low over the town centre and are said to have disappeared mysteriously quite suddenly. Witnesses also say there was no sound accompanying the lights. One picture sent to us appears to show three distinct lights which do not seem to be connected by any visible object. Chelsea Salt told Grimsby Live, "My mum's partner saw them on his way to work. He stopped to take a picture and when he turned around at the railway crossing and looked back, they had gone. No noise or anything. It was really strange. Apparently there were other people there too, stopping their cars and taking pictures." Meanwhile, Paul Swift said quite a few people at work had also witnessed the strange lights. He goes on to say that, "Is this military aircraft, drones, or something a bit more alien? Please let us know." So they're basically calling for people that have... We know people were stopping taking photographs of this. So they were asking for more people to send the pictures in that they got. There's one picture in that article where you can see this object, and then they've zoomed in on it. But it is, to all intents and purposes, three glowing balls, glowing orbs, you know, in a triangle formation. But what's interesting about this story is, well, for me anyway, is that my dad works just the other side of Grimsby in a place called Immingham, and he said it was about 5:15 in the morning, and he looked over Grimsby and he saw these bright lights, and he watched them for a little bit, and he noticed there was no navigation beacons or anything like that on a conventional aircraft, nothing flashing, just these steady balls of light. He said there was not moving up, down, left or right. There's just basically static in the sky. And he could see that it was in a triangle formation. Anyway, he watched them for a little while. And eventually they moved out in the triangle formation. So they just moved out to make a bigger triangle formation, if you like. And then they moved back again to the original size. And then he said they just blinked out and it was gone. Now for him, he's still waiting. He's waiting for more articles to appear in the Telegraph to see if someone can tell him what it was. Because he's expecting a conventional explanation for this, whether it was drone or some military aircraft or whatever, or a trick of light. Anyway, he's waiting for that. I don't think you're going to get one. I think most of us who know even a little bit about UFOs know these things are here all the time. What they want, nobody knows. That's the question now, really, should be, not are they here, but what do they want? I think it was even Stephen Hawking said that the fact that they don't show themselves to us, or not show themselves, but don't make contact, he seemed to think that led him to believe that must be for a sinister reason. So I'm not sure about that, but it's definitely intriguing. But if you want to check that out, go to the Facebook page, which is Realm of Supernatural Podcast, and you can check that article out there, and you can see the pictures. And hopefully people will send more in, and then I'll obviously post them up. But yeah, that was it. So let's get on with the show. So now I give you Linda Godfrey. Before we get into some of the encounters from the book, I wanted to ask you, obviously you know, by profession you're a journalist, and I just wanted to ask you what other journalists feel about the work that you do.
Well, I feel that, as long as I'm checking my sources and doing my due diligence and research, that it's not much different than technically than trying to find out facts and write about any other topic, because basically what I'm doing is telling people stories, helping them tell their stories about things that they saw, and then trying to kind of suss it out and figure out if it could have been something else, and check out all possibilities. And then generally I just like to leave people with what possibilities there are, what the what the witness thought it was. If I reach any conclusions, then just let them draw their own conclusions from that. So to me, it's pretty much like most journalism.
Absolutely. I wondered if they would view it that way, or if they'd view it just as, just total disregard for it without even looking at the evidence kind of thing, you know?
I'm sure that happens. Yeah. In fact, I know that it does. But, I said in my very first story about it, in my first book, and really ever since, that when it comes to the upright canines, I don't believe, and I never have believed, that people are seeing actual Hollywood-style werewolves, the way we think of them in our pop culture, where there's, Lon Chaney growing whiskers and his fangs are getting long and his eyes are popping and his claws are coming, yeah. I just believe that that is what anybody's been dealing with, and probably 90% at least of these things are as described could be possibly explained by upright wolves or coy wolves or even large dogs in some cases. The question is, why are they walking upright? And which is my main definition of what is now usually called a dog man. It's not normal for wild animals to do that. I've searched far and long, calling animal specialists, wolf specialists, to ask if they are surveilling any wolf packs that they've seen upright or bipedal behavior in. Never had a one. The closest I came was an elderly trapper in a bar up in northern Michigan, and he said he's had one stand up to kind of confront him because he had it in a trap. I'm sure that it was scared to death. And he said he has seen them stand up to sort of show themselves as a little more frightening than they are, but they usually drop back right down to all fours. So Okay. Why are people seeing them? I'm still looking for that the answer to that question.
Well, indeed, yeah. What sort of trap was it that he had it in?
He didn't go into that. It couldn't have been the regular foot trap, where I don't think it would have been able to stand up. He might have had more of a snare or something. I didn't get that technical with him on it, but that was what he had said was the one experience that he had.
Yeah. So, in essence, then, what we're describing when we're talking about the dog man is, like you said there, just an upright canine. It's not half man, half dog in that regard. It's just like pure dog, but upright.
Yeah, and again, I'd say 90%. There are certain types that sound a lot more like the black phantom dogs of Europe, and especially Great Britain. Yeah. There are some that just are different altogether. There are some that are seen around Native American land reserves that seem more like what they would call a skinwalker, but most reports say that it's something that looks like a wolf or a German shepherd with pointed ears on top of the head, long muzzle, fangs. Sometimes they'll even mention it as resembling Anubis, the Egyptian god of the dead, which has short, shiny black hair, but it can also have dark-colored or gray, shaggy fur as well. So the fur color and texture varies about the same amount that you'd expect to find within any pack of wolves out in the wild. So that doesn't surprise me. But it also does not walk flat-footed like humans or Bigfoot is said to do. It walks on its toe pads, and therefore it has a leg that looks kind of funny to us. And most people, if they've got a dog, they don't think a lot about its, how it's put together. But a dog or any kind of canine is walking what's called digitigrade on the toe pads, and where we would expect to, people will say, well, it was walking on its toes, but it was, and really well, but its leg was bent backwards. And what they're seeing is kind of pointing backwards. On us, that would be the heel. On an animal, it's usually called the hock.
Yeah.
And so they see this hock kind of pointing backwards, and kind of your mind just kind of takes it as a knee, because that's where our knee would be. But the knee would be actually farther up the canine's leg. And so, just seeing this thing, most people don't really think to go through that process of analyzing its structure. So, but that's when people say that to me, then I know that they're really making observations of the creature and not just inventing something from their head, because that's something that they saw. They're trying very hard to convey it to me. And then when I explain it to them, they're like, oh, yes, you know, I should have figured that out. But that's exactly what it was doing. One slight difference is that many people will say it had paws and there were claws, but they looked, the hands looked more like hands than paws. They had longer fingers on them, longer claws. That may be an adaptation that goes with animals that are able to do this, or, you know, I don't really know what the explanation is for that. They have normal color eye shine, green, yellow. So in every other way, they look like canines.
Yeah. When we're talking about hands rather than paws, are we talking about a thumb as well, or?
I'm sorry, about what?
A thumb. Do they have a thumb, or is it just like fingers almost?
Oh, I see. There's no opposable thumb, except for a few exceptions that I think where you're dealing with a different type of entity or creature altogether. But again, most of them, I have had people say that they've seen it cup its hands and then lap from water in its hands. Or paws. I'm using the word hands because I hear that so much from witnesses. But normally, if a canine goes down to water to drink, they will just stick their head in and lap it up, you know, in their muzzle. Well, people have seen these things that walk bipedally lap it up from their palms, which is very unusual. I also had somebody report seeing them holding like a piece of meat or a dead animal in their lying across their paws and eating it that way, rather than normally, you know, if your dog gets something good, it'll put it down on the floor, fasten it in place with one paw, and then, you know, start just chowing down that way, holding it in place.
Yeah.
So these behaviors are different. The one other thing that is not part of the anatomy, but more just behavioral, is that many, many people who see this dog man type thing will say, you know, it really looked like it should have been all canine, but it stared at me in a way that I felt it was as interested in me as I was in it, and that it was passing along some sort of message. They'd say it wasn't like in English or words, but I knew from what it was, the way it was looking at me, that it was saying, and then they'll say something really specific, like it was saying it wanted to jump on the hood of my car, or if I told anybody, it would get me. That's another one that I hear frequently, or I'm better than you are. And, you know, these are really odd things for people to pick up from an animal, because people, especially, you know, who are working out in the wilds or whatever, have animal confrontations every day with bears and wolves and coyotes and, you know, all types of different animals. And almost never have I heard, and I'm sure maybe there are some incidents, but it's just not normal for somebody to perceive that an animal is giving it a specific message.
Yeah. Now, I mean, this crops up time and time again in Bigfoot cases and Dogman cases. Yeah. This almost... I mean, I don't want to say psychic phenomenon, but it's along those lines. It might just be body language. We're picking up on the body language of this creature and then determining ourselves what we think it's trying to convey, I suppose. But you do get these, you know, really interesting messages. Some of them you just pointed out there. And you know, that does make me wonder if they are able to think, you know, get these messages across. They also, this that crops up time and time again, is this air of arrogance, you know, like almost, you know, you just said there, some people have actually received the message, you know, I'm better than you, you know, you're almost not worthy.
That's a good way to put it.
And from that, they don't seem to attack us. I know there's been cases where these creatures have been said to attack people. I'm not saying they don't attack us, but in general, they seem to have, you know, that air of arrogance where they're willing to walk away, you know, because it's always like we're not wavy. You know, what's your feelings on that?
Well, to me, this is behavior where they stop long enough to scare somebody to pieces, whether or not they have a definite message or not. And then the next thing that happens is people always say, well, then it dived back in the river, or it ran back in the woods, or it disappeared into the cornfield. It's like it then, once it's made its point, it then gets out of sight. And again, that's something that's reported over and over and over again. Not always. There are a few that almost seem to taunt people with their presence, which is kind of an interesting thing, you know, why. But to me, it smacks most of moves that are territorial in nature, where it has a certain area that it wants for itself. And even if you're just driving a car and passing by, if you slow up, indicating that there's something there of interest to you, well, that would then, I think, cause the same reaction, you know, if you're going to be territorial. And it is true also that many animals that normally don't walk bipedally will rear up when they are trying to give a message that somebody's in the wrong place. And it's a very territorial move. You know, gorillas, which are not normally upright, will stand upright. People think of them that way, but they aren't really. Yeah. They're trying to
make themselves look more imposing, yeah?
Right. They'll stand up, beat their chests, you know, tear down a little tree, whatever, hoping you'll just get out of there and it won't have to waste any of its energy on you.
Mm. I think it's interesting that we see that behavior in some of the Bigfoot accounts as well.
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, just as general, over the years, your sightings that have been sent to you, and obviously you meet people, and people send these to you. Have you seen a widening in the you know, the places, the locations where you're getting these from? I mean, even other countries, or is it just predominantly centered around the States for you?
Oh no, it's all over the world, and I realized that back in it was in the winter of 91-92. When I first broke the story that I called the Beast of Bray Road, and I immediately began, as soon as it went out on AP, I began getting messages from people. And the first ones are kind of close. There was one from nearby Racine. Then there was one from Michigan. I had one from the Virgin Islands. Someone wrote and said their relative had been in occupied France during World War II and seen this out in the rural areas. So, and then there's Canada, of course, and South America, somebody's reported it from Italy, and I think there would be many more from parts of Europe and distant places if people were able to hear of it, you know, and knew where to report it. And the internet is kind of bringing that out now, because so many more people are online, and it doesn't really matter where you are. You can tune in and find out where all they've been seeing, and it's really pretty astounding how far flung they are. It's pretty much wherever anything is like a large canine, especially areas that have wolves. But sometimes you get into places that don't, and whatever is the top predator will often be thought of, even if people aren't seeing it very often, will have at least a cultural story about upright were-jaguars, for instance, or upright hyenas, depending on where they live.
I mean, the hyena ones always interest me, and especially when I see that reports in the States of people witnessing hyenas, and it must be something to do with the way these creatures move on all fours, you know, with that raised shoulders, that just sort of looks like a hyena from a distance, you know?
Well, that trait does show up almost as a subspecies trait now and then. I do have people report it, and there's one of my chapters in the new book, I Know What I Saw, is about things that I finally put a name to. I call them dire dogs. Not quite the same thing as dire wolves. Dire wolves they were recently made very popular by Game of Thrones, you know, because the family each had their own pet dire wolf.
Yeah.
But the dire wolves were not terribly much bigger than today's timber wolves. And some of these things, and they look very much like wolves, which, you know, and we have a lot of skeletons in La Brea tar pits and other places in Southern California, and they haven't been, extinct all that long either, maybe 10,000 years, which is not very long in terms of species, you know, extinction. Mm. We found things that were considered extinct much longer than that. You know, the coelacanthin is one famous example of a prehistoric looking fish. So these people had been reporting to me since really day one back in 91, 92, along with the incidents that looked most like a canine, you know, a normal canine wolf, or maybe wolf hybrid of some kind, or just pure wolf. They'd say, I saw this thing, and that's how so many people started out too. It's amazing how everybody sort of, it's like you have this stock photo recognition in your head that everybody else sees it the same way, and I hear certain phrases over and over. They'll say, I saw this thing, it looked like a huge dog, not really so much like a wolf. Sometimes they'll say it was very wolf-like. And they'll say, but it was the size of a Shetland pony or an Angus bull calf or something like that, which is really big for any type of canine and, you know, bigger than any of the large dog breeds that we know of. So, and it doesn't act the same. It normally, maybe only in one or two incidents do I have it going up on its hind legs. Most of the time it stays on all four. And what they do in many cases, if the person is driving, they will chase the vehicle at whatever speed the vehicle is going. And it seems like they'll either be right next to the driver's window, and then the people or the driver will notice that its shoulders are at the same height as the bottom of the window of a truck or some large vehicle, which is really, really large. For any canine type animal. More frightening is that many of them will follow closely to the back of the vehicle and every once in a while kind of bump the vehicle with their shoulder, mm-hmm. like they're trying to get it to go off the road. You know, and I had one man write me that it actually did make him veer into the ditch for just a moment, and he was able to steer himself back on the road, luckily, and it fell back then, and he was able to get away from it. But I call these dire dogs because they do have that description of the lower hyena rear end many times, not always. There are some variations. But I do hear that. They also often are reported to have a ruff around the back of their neck, kind of like the hyenas do. And they have a bigger head than you would expect from the body, but it's wider, which indicates that it's designed to crunch bones and bigger things, much like the way a hyena's head is shaped, except it's bigger.
Yeah.
So, and I hadn't been really publishing all my stories about these because normally when I write a book, I'm trying to not just make a big compilation of scary stories, but I like to have some angle that I'm working that will help maybe to figure something out about these creatures. You know, I'm looking for all examples of ones that are doing all a certain activity or living in a certain area, whatever. And then when I began doing this book, I realized that I was getting more of these very large canines on all fours, and that I really had an obligation, I felt, to do something with them and show that there did seem to be this other branch that were more aggressive in that they're trying to bounce vehicles off the road. They're bigger. They've got a differently shaped head with these big crunching ears or crunching teeth. So, and the ears, my mind was going one way and I was talking another. But by the ears, I mean that they're most of the time pointed upright like the normally described regular upright canines, but sometimes they do have that doggy look to them. Once in a while, people will see the shorter, flappy ear, or they'll see something about it that looks like the build of a dog. So they do have some variation, and so I thought, well, dire dog is a good way to say it. You know, it shows us there's a difference from it and the dire wolves, but that it still has it's dire means terrible. So it's still a terrible, dire creature to come across on a winter's night, you know, when the roads are slippery and there's a smooth path into the ditch.
It's interesting that it's trying to knock people off the road. It makes you wonder what would have happened to that gentleman if he had got stuck in that ditch.
Indeed. Yes. Yeah. That's the scary part.
Indeed. I mean, the book, obviously you mentioned in the book, you know, which came first, the monster or the myth. And you get this element of people believing that it's almost like, something it doesn't exist, obviously, a lot of people. Some people think that it might be some sort of supernatural being, almost flesh and blood. And then you get a decent majority of people who believe this might be like made by the military, etc. But when you see the reports and how far back they go, I mean, just in the UK, I think they go back to 1600s and beyond. Obviously, that tends to rule out military intervention. Then when you look across the sighting reports from all over the world, again, that seems to rule that out. The supernatural thing, obviously, there's elements of that that are play in a lot of the cases. I still come down on the flesh and blood myself. But... Mm-hmm. In the UK, I mean, you mentioned it just there before, but we get a lot of sightings now of big cats in the UK, okay? So we don't have wolves here, we don't have big cats, but we do get a lot of sightings. Just in Staffordshire, in the 5 years in Staffordshire, the police report came back as having, these are basically reports that I mentioned, either in this case it was leopards, pumas, etc. Mm-hmm. They had over 1,400 reports of leopards in 5 years, 1,000 reports on pumas in 5 years. But the interesting one in regards this conversation is the fact that they had 409 reports of wolves, 12 reports of a werewolf, and 85 reports of beasts. That obviously runs the gambit there, but we are getting these sightings reported. And then, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like the police can do anything with that information. And it makes you wonder what, you know, where this information goes and who has it. But where do you stand on a cover-up?
Well, it's more, to my mind, a suppression rather than a complete cover-up. It's like holding back whatever can be held back. And you mentioned the big cats. I actually have been working on a documentary film with my son about the mountain lions and what everybody, if they see a black one, usually people call it a black panther, although technically panthers and mountain lions aren't supposed to be able to have black fur or to procreate together. But we'll kind of use it because it's turned into sort of a colloquialism for everybody can then picture a mountain lion type animal with black fur.
Yeah.
And there's a place in central Wisconsin where the environment is very, very different from the rest of Wisconsin and from much of anywhere. You go from farmlands and woods to all of a sudden there's this area where there's a 20-mile line of this really unusual rose quartz, and it's rose-colored quartz, it is. And it's some of the oldest land formation on the entire Earth right there, highly magnetic. And right around in this area, there's a small town called Hillsboro that has had a newspaper editor and writer started collecting these maybe 8-9 years ago, and then began sending them to me. He wanted them on record somewhere else. And he's to the point where he has well over 150 reports just from this small area around Hillsborough, which is very hills and valleys, all different kinds of elevations. Again, the rock cliffs, just exactly the rivers running through it in the valleys, just what any cougar loves. And there are, he estimates there are many, many more. These are just the reports that people have given to him. And it's such a small population in that area that it's gotten to the point where at first people were making fun, and then before they knew it, they or people they knew or relatives were all seeing it. And the interesting thing is that out of all these sightings, and most of which were in daylight and often very close up, people were standing on their back porch or in their barn, you know, or just driving in their car and would see them, they're black. They're black-furred. There's a word for that, which is escaping my mind at the moment, but it'll come back to me. And that's not supposed to be. They're supposed to be tan or some other normal color if they're mountain lion. Well, different people have described these black-furred ones that they call panthers as having that same type of larger head for the body. And that's kind of how jaguars are built too. They're sturdier, they weigh more than a mountain lion, and they do have that kind of blockier, larger head. So, Steve Stanek, who is the newspaper reporter that sent all these to me, has developed a theory that either at some point, either when cougars were eliminated from most states, east of the Mississippi, and kind of forced down to the western states in the U.S., that they started breeding with some of these melanistic, that's the word I was looking for, melanistic black jaguars or leopards that were existing down there and made their way back. He thinks maybe some of them never left, but that the jaguars actually migrated up that way. And we know these things do move a lot. They have records of one going from the Black Hills in the western U.S. all the way to Connecticut that they tracked via DNA from droppings that they found. And unfortunately, was finally, after all that heroic, lengthy journey, the poor thing was hit by a car when it got to Connecticut. There was another one from Wisconsin that actually wandered out from an alleyway in Chicago in one of the close-in suburbs. And had to be shot because it had evidently lost its fear of people, and there was a fear of predation, which also is one of the that, and that probably has a lot to do with the suppression of many reported sightings by officials, because once you do go ahead and accept and say yes, we have breeding populations here, then you are not only going to have more staff, you're going to have to collar some of them, track them, but you're also going to have to probably pay reparations for any farm animals that are lost. And it's interesting because I have a color photo, a couple of photos of an Angus calf that somebody sent to Steve Stanek, and he passed it on, where it looks like it's been totally UFO mutilated. UFO style, I should say, mutilated, what we think of is where there are surgical cuts and certain parts moved and removed and the rest is still there. Yeah. And in this case, one of the animals was lying there. It had what looked like a surgically removed space where the leg quarter should have been, and also it was missing a tongue, and it was missing its ears, which seems really weird until you realize, which I didn't until a few months ago in my research, that I finally found this is the description of what jaguars prefer when they make a kill. If they can't eat it all right away, they will take the tongue and the ears, you know, and then go after the other parts. Whereas mountain lions prefer to, they will use one of their index claws, which are a little bit bigger and sharper, and they'll make that cut. They'll take off a leg quarter if they can. If they can't have time for that, they'll just cut a slit and then take out the heart and the liver and have those first. So here we have predation evidence of both by Hillsborough. So, one, you know, you can just see the troubles that they have once they allow this to be known and recognized. And I think in many communities, they just sort of ignore it professionally as best they can until it gets too, there's too much evidence.
Yeah.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to COSI. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to COSI starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at COSI.org.
I mean, here in the UK, we've had the army out to these big cats that have been seen and, you know, and all that, trying to obviously eliminate them. But we are getting the attacks on people now.
That's scary. Yeah, they get used to humanity, yeah. And that's not good.
So, and obviously, and livestock as well, so... I don't so much see it as a cover-up in this country for that, the black cat themselves, because we do get a lot of reports on the papers here. But your book then, so in there you've got a section on little people, which it's rare to get the stories of the little people. And these are not just... I mean, they look like Bigfoots to some extent, but they are distinguishable from Bigfoots. These are not like baby Bigfoots. These are a total separate entity of them for themselves. So have you got any reports of those that you could share?
Yeah, I think I have one in here. I'll mention real quick before we go on from the cougars. If you go to YouTube and look up Return to Wildcat Mountain, you can see a trailer that gives you some idea of what these people who are interviewing are saying. So I'll just, it's just Return to Wildcat Mountain on YouTube. Thanks okay. for letting me get that so people can see what I'm talking about.
Is that your filming, is it?
Yes, my son and I, he's actually doing all the real filming work. I'm just kind of directing and writing. And he's has a film degree from the Art Institute in Chicago. So it's...
Cool.
We're hoping it can help shed some light, you know, on some of these topics.
I mean, actually, before I move on to little people, I should ask you, really, I mean, why are these cats moving?
Well, one of the
prime... seem to be on the move, sorry, Shay.
Yeah, one of the prime reasons is that a male mountain lion needs about 30 square miles of territory to call its own.
Okay.
And it has to have a mate there, too. The females don't go quite as far. The male can, kind of like having a big house with several wives. He can have a big range of space to go in, and then there may be two or three females in different areas of it that then become part his extended family. So in order to keep finding females and the land they need, they have to keep going farther and farther where there haven't been any living for a while.
Yeah.
So it's this kind of push of nature that's setting them out that way. And they obviously, if they're down along the west coast, they can't go west because they'll just end up in the ocean. So east, northeast, and north and south are the only ways they can go.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, that might be the reason that we're seeing them more and more in the UK then they just get that population has just got to a point now where they can no longer hide.
Right, exactly. And, well, there is one more kind of interesting thing, too, that I'll throw into this. As to their origins, I do agree with people. I know that there have been circuses in Wisconsin, say. In fact, this whole, the Hillsborough place is adjacent to the Baraboo Hills. Well, Baraboo has the World Circus Museum and was a frequent overwintering place for years. And I have found in history books different circuses that have had leopards escape, you know, different big cats. So that can be a source. There are still many people raising these things privately and then find out they've got the pet from beyond, not what they thought, you know.
Just a bit, and, yeah.
Yeah, and they let it go so they can be stocked that way. But when we started interviewing a large number of people, we had several with either Native American themselves or had Native American ties. And they'd get all done and they'd say, you know, what we believe, meaning their culture stories of their tribe, what we believe is that the tan ones are just natural animals, but the black ones are first and foremost spirit animals that can appear like normal tangible creatures, but the black ones are actually spirit animals and come from the spirit world.
Okay.
So that puts a whole different spin on the topic, actually.
Indeed. What color was the one that got run over?
That was a tan colored one.
Okay.
Yeah, and I mean, my husband has been stalked in our own backyard. It's lucky he wasn't eaten about 5 years ago. Yeah, in Wisconsin. So, and I've had lots of people telling me that they saw it. And so many are still afraid to really tell the whole story or let their names be known because they don't want to be made fun of.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the ridicule factor. Yeah. So little people then.
Yes. Yeah. I've always found these very interesting because when I was a kid, I was very into the idea of fairies. It wasn't that I believed in them, but I just really liked to read about them and imagine them, and I was always drawing pictures of them.
Yeah.
I still have some of those. So when I get a story like that from someone, and as you say, they are fewer and far between than stories, encounter stories of the other creatures, I really like to get the full story as best that I can. So, and it turns out that there are several different types that I've been able to find. One type is definitely kind of in the phantom category, where they can disappear from sight. They can walk into a rock, and then people are legendarily supposed to be able to follow them into it, and probably never come out. That kind of, they look like little humans dressed in clothing. And then there is another type. People sometimes use the term little people for very small humans. Human species that we know are humans because, you know, they're living and walking among us and starring in the Wizard of Oz dance troupe and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But there are still legends about them too, which are necessary to peel away from the legends of the little spirit creatures. And then there's a third kind, which appears to be humanoid, but they're very small. And they're not, as you said earlier, they're not like Bigfoot babies. They're just a small tribe of the same, if you will. I don't know if that's appropriate, but a small type of the completely covered with fur human-like creatures. So there are several to deal with there. And it can get very confusing, actually, sometimes if you're trying to sort them out. But I had several, I thought this was interesting. In Victoria, Canada, there was a report that I had from an eyewitness who he reported this to me on April Fool's Day. So I noticed that right away. I sort of trained myself to look for little red flags, and I had to ask him,
yeah.
Hey, you know, are you just, spoofing me? And he actually hadn't thought of that himself. Or he said he had not and was sort of hurt that I would say that. And I tried to explain, I have to ask many uncomfortable questions to witnesses that I talk to. I just have to, such as were they drinking? Did they have any substance that would give them hallucinations? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so he finally, you know, won my confidence from him, and he said, he had an encounter in July of 2014 of what he said it was about an elf, or what I suspect was an elf. It was early morning, just before sunrise, about 5:10 a.m. The sun was rising at 4:30, or 5:40, excuse me, and he was 37 years old at that time, delivering early morning newspapers near a wooded area around the local university in Victoria, B.C., Canada. And he said there's a wooded area right there that really surrounds the entire campus. And he was one block away from that forest entry on a parallel street. And he said the street he stood on was a higher elevation than the grounds around him, so he had a really good look at where he was. And all of a sudden, this owl began squawking, making a lot of noise, and was curious about it. So he kind of rode his bicycle around the block really quickly. The bird had stopped making sounds, and he said as his eyes became adjusted to the dark forest, he saw this elf-like creature, and the land went completely silent. It's what is called, Jenny Randall's calls the Oz factor. It's been kind of adopted.
Yeah.
And he was about 4 feet tall. There were actually a bunch of them. He said there were a few taller and some smaller, some skinny. They were in different positions. They were all staring at him. So it wasn't just one. There was a whole little crowd of them there. And he said they had cone-shaped hats, pointy ears, and he felt himself that they were earth creatures. They were black in color, but had sort of a pale white glow around them. Their eyes pulsed colors, and he has felt them try to attempt to contact him again. That's the strange part. Usually at sunset there, I feel a bit uneasy, he said. I'm not out in the early morning anymore, but I do feel like there's still a link available if I wanted to pursue it. But he's decided he doesn't want to pursue it. And that's an interesting point, too, because many people, they'll join groups, they'll join clubs, they'll try and see these creatures their whole life, spend a lot of time, and never will. And sometimes the people that do see it do not feel like they were lucky. They feel like, why did it pick me?
Yeah, yeah.
They'll have bad dreams about it. They'll say, not a day goes by that I don't have some sort of remembrance of this incident, and really often wish it hadn't happened to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've seen them twice. So
the little people?
Yeah.
Oh, that's really great.
Yeah. So,
are you happy about it? I'm just curious whether which camp you fall into. Are you glad you saw them, or wish you never had?
It's kind of down the middle, I suppose. I'm more confused than. Well, I always ask the question why they obviously presented themselves to me. The first one didn't want us to see it. It tried to hide. The second one went out of his way to present himself to me. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've always put it down to Irish. I've got high Irish heritage.
I do too.
Yeah, and I just wondered if there's a link there with obviously the leprechauns, the fairies, etc., the wee folk, and seeing these things, I don't know.
Well, there is a British area, maybe it's Irish, where there's a really long-named creature that can look either like a Bigfoot or like one of the small little people. He can change back and forth, and it's like a five-syllable name. I can't remember it exactly. And I think that's more in Ireland. So there is that, but you know, I confess that in the last chapter of this book, I told about my own encounters with Bigfoot. Here I am trying to suss out a dog man for 3 years, and when I do get to see something, it's Bigfoot, which I'm not complaining about. I'm sort of glad that I did see them, but they started getting a little cheeky and, you know, showing up, you know, a little too close to home. I won't get into all that. But I did put those, and I held this back for a while. It was about 5 or 6 years ago. And I thought, well, people are going to say, oh, sure, that's convenient for her because she writes books about these things and now she sees them. Well, you know, you just can't have control, you know, from my point of view. Once these things are aware of you, aware that you're looking for them, they can show themselves when they want to. And I think that may be sort of an opening. There are other people who bear that thought out, and John Keel is one, and many others. But I did put it in the book. You know, I talked about it with my editor, and I said, well, I don't feel that I can, in good conscience, keep asking other people to share their stories if I'm not willing to step out and say, yeah, I saw one too. Actually, I saw what I think was the same one three times within a space of a year. So, yeah, but you do question. I do think about it a lot.
I mean, are you willing to tell a little bit of that now, or are you saving that for the book?
Well, it's in the book. I had, before the actual sightings, I had a really kind of mind-blowing encounter where a 35-foot long living oak branch was twisted off a tree right about maybe 150 feet from me, from where I was standing. It was in the Kettle Moraine Southern Forest. And that, if you go to lindagodfrey.com and into the search box, type Bigfoot branch, you can see photos, and the whole thing is told in, you know, full length. I won't get into that here, but the other three were doing different things in a certain area adjacent to the Kettle Moraine State Forest. And each time it was something different. Each time, for a different reason, I did not have a camera held up in front of me. And each time it was looking at me, almost as if it wanted to speak. Yeah. So it would take me a long time to explain what they're doing, and it is in the book. But one of the maybe most chilling ones, I think, was the one where I ran out of my house. I lived very, very near there. I ran out of my house just on the spur of the moment to have a quick walk in the morning, and I came up to this place where there are usually sandhill cranes nesting. And I looked, and there was this black, roundish, furred head and shoulder sticking up from the four-foot-tall hay or grass that was in the center of this field. And I had looked there first because that's where the cranes nested. And I soon realized my mental imagery is running through its list of what this could possibly be. And the sun was behind it, so I could not see the face. It was a uniform, soft, almost black color, kind of like the deepest charcoal you could get, and stood out very strongly against the grass. And I looked over at the fence post to see if I could be seeing a fence post by mistake. And they were much smaller, and they were gray and, you know, partly straight. So I looked back at the figure, and as soon as I did that, it slowly lowered itself straight down into the grass like it was crouching.
Yeah.
And at that point, I felt, I know what that is. There's no other possible thing it could be. And so I just slowly turned around and then walked home as fast as I could.
Well, can't blame you for that.
I had no camera with me, so.
No, I mean, most people don't tend to walk around with a camera in their hand, do they? But saying that, though, I think that a lot of this nowadays, you know, with dashboard cams and GoPros and that, I think we will start seeing a lot more.
I hope so. I have a dash cam.
Yeah.
And so far I haven't got anything but deer on it, but at least I know it can catch things and record them. So one of these days.
Do you have one facing backwards as well?
I don't, but I think that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
And it's something that I'm planning to implement.
Yeah, in case someone comes running out behind you, because they tend to, don't they?
They do. They do that.
But saying that, though, I mean, obviously you've come across a lot of these reports as well, but they tend to know if you've got... they seem to know almost... They can read your intentions. They know if you've got a camera. They know if you've got a gun. Even if it's concealed, you know, and then they tend not to show themselves at that point. I mean, obviously hunters do run into these things, but their intentions are mostly focused on what their prey, rather than these creatures. So
right, and killing, and not everybody's. I mean, not everybody who takes a gun into the woods is intent on killing a Bigfoot. You know, if that's what they're looking for, it's usually for self protection. Mostly from other things. We have a lot of wildlife on this continent.
Oh, yeah, you do there, yeah. Yeah, I mean, up to recently, the only things you could get bit by in this country was an adder and a mosquito. So.
Right.
So, if you went out in the woods, you know. So.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, have you got any particularly favourite stories that you'd like to share for the book?
Oh boy, there are so many interesting ones.
There's a dog man one. There's a dog man one.
There's one that is called The Witchy Wolf of Omer Plains. And that took place in Michigan, over on the eastern coast side of Michigan. And it's a place that I was able to go a couple of times and research and talk with their librarians and historians. But there was an urban legend that sprang up around the 50s or so, that if young people particularly drove their cars out to a certain spot on Omer Plains, which was kind of a big meadow-like area surrounded by pines that sort of whistled, that they would hear the whistling of what they called the Witchy Wolf, which was said to have been a Native American guardian spirit that was set there because there were sacred burial mounds in the area and places where battles had taken place. And that if you got out of the car, you were risking your life. And, of course, lots of people had very scary tales to tell. Well, I learned that there was more to this than just the modern urban legend style car knocker, as they call them, where they're knocking on the car door and scaring people inside.
Yeah.
And that I received some documents, which I'm not sure, and I go through explaining these documents where there are places that give me pause, you know, because I think some of them have been embellished. But supposedly, this all started in the Civil War days when the son of some people who lived there in Omer, was the name of the village, went off to war, and his remains were sent back to them, and it was the wrong time of year to try and bury something in Michigan. So they had a proper burial and did more in the spring. But they went out to the cemetery right at the edge of this pine forest. And where they had dug in a little bit, there was something living in this place. A mother wolf with several cubs leaped out at them, snarling, just leaped out of this semi-hole that they had started digging, and sat there and howled, and they could hear other wolves answering her howl in the woods around them. And rather than cleaning up the grave sites and doing other things, they just took their utensils and beat it for home. And there were lots of things that I was able to find. For one thing, all the people who were mentioned in the articles, I was able to go back into old newspapers and verify, and genealogy reports, verify that people by that name did live in that town at that time, and that they had the occupations that were listed as being their occupations. So there were lots of corroborations that made it hard not to believe in it. And what the soldier died of was supposed to have been what was called either scorbutus or scorbutus. I've heard both pronunciations. And today we would call it scurvy. There was a huge lack of vitamins in those Civil War camps.
Yeah.
And that's what he actually died from at the time. So having the chance to corroborate so many things, and then you hear this story that's been around, you know, for 150 years, it's hard not to think that there's really something to it.
Indeed. Yeah. So, have you got any other stories? I mean, you don't cover UFOs in this book, no?
Not so much in this one, because with the exception of there was a Native American tale that I included because it talked about kind of the voyage of this Native American man many centuries ago who was in a clearing and saw this strange object come down from the sky. And it landed, and a door opened, and these different-looking but beautiful maidens came out, and they were performing different, possibly scientific functions. They were doing, you know, incomprehensible things. And there's a long story with it. He ended up marrying one of them, and The thing that was interesting was that he was taken inside this airborne vehicle and actually taken places. And he learned that its propulsion was powered by sound. And the only way that they could get it to move and to lift off again was that they had to all, these ladies had to all coordinate and sing this interesting type of song. Maybe it was a humming type of thing, and then it would lift up. Oh. And I looked that up, and I found out there would have been no way for anybody recording this very early tale to know this, but there now are many experiments going on with craft powered by sound vibrations. In fact, I saw a new one just the other day listed in one of the science magazines. So, that's another, when I find these little corroborations or verifications of things that you read in the stories, the encounter stories, or even the myth, and you think, oh, this is, you know, silly, this is not possible, whatever. And then you find a corroboration of somebody who's doing that very thing. You just have, again, you know, to me, that's what the book is about, is finding these associations and reasons to keep searching through and find other truths, perhaps, in the final analysis.
It does seem like there's almost a thread running through all these accounts, you know, whether
yes.
it be Dogman, UFOs. I'm not saying that Bigfoot's comes from the UFO, I don't know, but there does seem to be some sort of correlation between them all, which does fascinate me as to why. But then you don't know if it's just particular regions that they're interested in or you know, who knows.
But so many of these creatures have been around and recorded ever since the earliest civilizations. You know, you go back to Sumeria and you find so many things that started there, and Egypt, yeah. of course, Anubis, and we've been, and then in North America, if you know where to look, you can find, I demonstrated this in, I think Monsters Among Us, or else American Monsters, that there are things that look like upright canines carved into rock pictures in the American West and Southwest. And how is everybody seeing these same things? You know, when you've got populations that are isolated to themselves often, you know, for many thousands of years, and then you dig up their burial and here they've got a bird man. So they seem to be just part of humanity in some way. And I think that's the final question that I would like to see. How is it that we are all united in depicting these photos, or not photos or pictographs or sculptures, whatever form they be found in?
I mean, do you think in the near future we will see one of these creatures brought forward, either dead or alive?
You know, it's just impossible to say. I wish I could know. You know, I, like you say, I have hopes for the dash cams and the GoPros and the better and better photography that we have, but we should have had more already. That's what keeps bothering me, because with the tan mountain lions, for instance, and even some of the black ones, a mountain lion will show up. It doesn't care if there's a camera. Bears, you can see YouTube videos of bears smashing into people's houses. There were two, I think, just in the last week, headed for the kitchen. They don't care if you're taking their picture. Any of these things, you know, I've had unseen creatures go to huge lengths to foil my trail cam and bend it back, bend the branch backwards, or, you know, whatever foolproof method I think I've dreamed up, they can thwart it, take the bait, and leave. And that's just not normal behavior.
No, that shows, you know, a high degree of intelligence, intelligence as in understanding of its surroundings and what you might be trying to achieve, I suppose. It does beg the question, like, why don't they want us to know that they
right.
exist, you know?
Exactly. And yet they go out of their way to stand in front of our cars on the highway or
yeah.
chase our cars on the highway. So
I do wonder on those accounts, though, whether they appreciate our lack of vision, especially night vision, I sometimes think that we approach them and they sort of think that the game's up. You know, they think they've almost been spotted. They probably don't not quite aware that we haven't got the night vision that they have.
Right.
You know,
I thought of that too. You know.
Yeah.
How much do they understand about us?
But they seem to know, you know, what you're up to when you go in the woods and put trail cams up. So they certainly know which way it faces and all the rest of it. So it's interesting and strange, highly strange.
That's the name of the game is strange.
Well, I imagine you're going to get many, many more encounters going forward because this phenomenon is only going to grow as people dare to speak about it. And obviously with the work you're doing and others, and these people feel they've got somewhere to get this message out. So I just have to say thank you very much for joining me again.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
That's a pleasure, honestly. And do you just want to tell people where they can get the book, and then do you want to mention that film again as well?
Yes. You can go to lindagodfrey.com. No W's or anything, just lindagodfrey.com. And there's a main page, and then there's an about page where you can find out what books there are, and they're easily obtainable. And then you can also go on YouTube or Facebook to Return to Wildcat Mountain.
Saying it's Wildcat Mountain. Okay, I'm going to look at that in a minute. I'm waiting for Andy to bring the book back. We have got the book. I know what I saw. And as soon as he brings it back, I'm going to get stuck into it. So I'm looking forward to it. The last book that we had, Monsters Among Us, that was fantastic.
Thanks so much.
And I don't think you get enough credit for your art as well. I think you're a very talented artist.
Well, that actually was my original vocation. I had an art education degree. So it's kind of fun to be able to illustrate my own books.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. But people should go out and check the website out and have a look at your artwork, especially when you draw the dog man in situations and stuff. I think it's really cool. So
thank you.
Indeed. Well, thank you very much for joining me, and have a great rest of the weekend.
You too. And thanks to all of your listeners as well.
No worries. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, I hope you really enjoyed that. Okay, if you get a chance, check out the Facebook page, check out the Patreon, and, you know, come and say hello. Send us an email, let us know your stories. We're still collecting my weird stories. They're going on the next few shows, hopefully. So if you've got any, send them to us at supernaturalpod@gmail.com. Obviously, the links are in the description. So, that being said, have a great week, and we will see you on the other side.
Well, they've gone. Though, just for now. It wasn't the right time for us to meet. But there'll be other nights, other stars for us to watch. They'll be back.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.